From Bundoran to the Inishowen Peninsula, Donegal County is a beautiful mosaic of shorelines, fields, bog, lakes and mountains. And for countless generations, these landscapes have supported and nourished us. Food was grown, harvested, collected or caught here by fishermen, farmers and households. Yet today, that connection to local, sustainable sources of food seems largely lost. But scratch the surface and it's still there, waiting to be reclaimed in a new generation of Donegal food producers. I'm Mary Brophy, and across the next 4 weeks, I'll be travelling through the county to meet the women and men who bring the unique flavours of Donegal to our tables, and who in a time of economic or climate crisis, play a more important role than ever before. This is Our Food.
Hi, Willie.
Yeah.
Mary,
nice to meet you.
How are you?
Hi,
Sarah. Mary Brophy.
Nice
how are
to
you?
Meet you?
I'm beginning this food journey just outside Glenties at an Utheros factory in open countryside. I'm here to meet the people behind Filigan's Food Company. They produce an award-winning range of jams, chutneys, relishes and oils with no artificial additives or preservatives. As we go into the steaming kitchen, a deliciously sweet citrus aroma greets me.
So this is the kitchen.
So this is the heartbeat of the business, and these are real, the real stars. So if I could just, Mary, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Mary runs the kitchen. This is Anna.
Hi, Anna.
And this is another Mary. So the knowledge and the skills that these people have around the food is just unbelievable. We wouldn't be where we are without them.
My name is Mary McGinley and I'm from Ardragh and I've been with Filigan's for the last 14 years.
And as we walk in, the most beautiful smell, I can kind of get a smell of lemon. There's something citrusy anyway going on here. It's marmalade, is it?
There's Seville marmalade cooking here in the Freema at the moment. We bring in the fruit fresh and it's all hand cut. We add water and we bring the fruit up to the boil. When it's soft, we add the sugar. We're waiting then on to set then after that, and then we take it out of the machine and then we hand fill it into the jars. And
so when you're making marmalade or jam at home, you're usually using like a big steel saucepan or
yes.
something. Right in front of me now we have two massive steel square drums. The marmalade here, this most beautiful orange colour,
yes, it is indeed.
Beginning to come to the boil. And right here
this
beside us, what's this one?
Chutney. This is tomato chutney here. Now this takes about 2.5 hours to cook. So you have tomatoes and onions and vinegar and sugar and spices in this. And it's quite a long process because we have to wait on it to reduce, to thicken, and then it forms a chutney. Now, when we were in Tullyard originally, before we came here, as you mentioned earlier about the stainless steel saucepans, that's how we started off. And it was doing it in pans, but this has become a bit more modern, we'll say, with the machines, and it's easier as well. Basically, what we have is we have it all programmed into here, and then, say, when we change, say, from Seville over to Raspberry, we just go to that page there, and it'll bring up.
And it's basically telling you the temperature that you want to get it to, and
yes.
once it reaches that temperature, it stops.
That's it.
That's
but
fantastic.
In addition to that, we also back up that tester, you know, to make sure it's set with the old method of putting it on the saucer and putting it into the fridge and waiting for the 4 minutes for the crease to form, and then we're sure.
Even though this is an industrial kitchen, it somehow retains that homemade atmosphere. Anna Krujinska is hand-chopping a large sinkful of oranges and lemons for the next batch of marmalade.
My working here is 12 years, so I'm from Poland, coming here for island work, so very happy.
You enjoy it?
Yeah, very joy. I'm really, really happy because different profession, different everything, to nicer to the change from my profession.
What were you doing originally?
Before time, I am butcher.
Butcher?
Butcher.
Okay.
That changed for now, more for the marmalade cooking and jam, so really happy.
So a small amount of knife skills
yes.
still being used with the chopping?
Yes, yes.
Even though we've gone bigger, it's still small, reasonably small batches, you know, and it makes the product all the nicer because it's sort of made with that care, we'll say, you know.
Absolutely.
And also the Sevilles there are the oranges that come in. Now, there's only a short season where they're available, so we have to work. We have to work really hard to get them processed in that short period of time, because they're only available. There's only a 2-week window with the Seville oranges.
So as you were talking there behind us, this alarm starts to go.
Yeah, well, really what it is always a reminder for us to stir it is the first thing. But when there's two machines going, sometimes it can be quite intense, and certainly when we're potting.
Yeah, it can be very busy with the two machines, because you have a good yield of jars, like you're possibly talking maybe 150 jars to pot, and you're doing all that by hand. My name is Mary Boyle, and I've been here about 18 years. Well, I've made jam from when I was about probably 12 at home with my mum and with my granny. But at that stage, I was probably only doing maybe two kinds of jam. And it was my first time when I came here to get involved in cooking.
So where are we at now with this particular mix? How far is that before it's ready for pouring?
Probably another sort of 10 minutes. As you can see now, it has come up to a temperature of 96 degrees, and we've it set, programmed for 103. So it's only a matter of minutes, really, you know.
There are three strands to Filigan's business: the retail trade, the restaurant trade, and own brand, where they produce jams and preserves for other companies and shops. In fact, this was where it all started, as director Willie Cremin and founder Sarah Moss explain.
I'd never made jam before. It was just that we were asked, could we try some out? We only started it because Philip and I had come over from London to live in Donegal, and he's an artist. So he was painting, and I had to try and think of something to do to... We had small children, and that was something I was able to do. So that was literally it. There was no plan. It just happened. It actually started with baking. We didn't make jam at all. We did carrot cakes, and they became quite well known in Donegal. So that was probably about 99, maybe. So for a couple of years, we were just going on the baking side, and then we did both for a while, and then the jam just took over.
Yeah, it started in the kitchen doing small chutneys and jams for what was then a small company in Dublin, but has grown since. That's Avoca. And from those little starting products, we have moved on up over the years to now having nearly 60 products. And the reason we can have that many products is because they're done, as you saw, in small batches. So we're able to move with what the customer wants. Yeah. We're not making these massive big products. A lot of the recipes are taken down from generation to generation within the family, and also from family and friends. And then with the changing consumer market, particularly with in the last 5 or 6 years, we would develop a number of products that are geared really for the next generation of jam chutney lovers who might be a bit younger but might want something different, like the beetroot and orange chutney or the chili jam, new products like that.
The small batches, is that kind of a deliberate philosophy of Filigan's? Is it something that you deliberately want to keep?
Yes, definitely. You know, it's always been part of the product, you know, and definitely helps make it such a good quality product. And it's not something we'd want to lose by our expansion.
And why? Why not go? Like, if it becomes really successful, why not go?
We've never wanted to be a mass-produced product. And I think that's the...
That's the ethos.
The ethos of the company, yeah.
I think you have to be true to yourself. Yeah. And the origins of this company is based around the handmade products. And it's based around nature. And it's based around tradition. And I think that once you move off from that, it becomes a very different animal. And we don't want to do that. You know, we just don't. Even if the opportunities may arise, you know, in a commercial environment, it's not a direction we want to go.
We have some of the products here in front of us now, Willie, and you're going to give me a taste of the
raspberry jam.
And that colour is just lovely. Mm. It's not too sweet.
No, it's not.
A lot of raspberry jams you get, they're very, very sweet. Yeah, that's lovely. The fruit is coming through rather than the sugar.
Yeah.
Mm.
Next is a marmalade made earlier, but this one has a unique local ingredient.
And this one here now.
This is a joint product actually with two Donegal companies. This is Silky Irish Whiskey. It comes from Slieve League Distillery. Really well known up here, and a lovely, lovely whiskey.
And a place we're visiting as part of this series as well.
Oh, great, Mary. Yeah. Lovely. So this is something that we've just worked with them on. And would you like a taste?
Mm. And again, the two flavours.
Yeah.
Mm. Lovely. That's lovely.
Do you like chutneys? This is an award-winning... This has got a gold award at a number of taste competitions. Can
you taste? Working with other food companies, is that a feature, do you think, of Donegal food companies? That kind of looking for ways to complement flavours?
I think companies are more open to doing things collaboratively. And it makes an awful lot of sense that when we use whiskey and when Silky are developing their brand, that we can work together, because Silky is a beautiful whiskey. So, you know, if we can do something together, why not? Mm. And I think that if you look at, you know, Donegal as a food destination and the push towards that and the coming together of an awful lot of food operations in a joint effort to make it happen up here, then I think it makes an awful lot of sense.
Filigan's has grown organically over the last 20 years. From their origins at Sarah and Philip's kitchen table, they've expanded twice and now employ 8 people here in Glenties. Back in the kitchen, Mary's marmalade has reached setting point and is about to be poured.
So you can see there now, there's a crease on that, and that's set now. What we'll do now, we've a pan heated up over there, and then what we do is we will, you'll see that this machine can tilt, okay? And then I will decant it with this jug into the saucepan, and then we put it up on the bench here, and then we pot.
So the steel drum is just gradually tipping up itself, and you're positioning.
So we want to be careful then that we don't overflow either.
Has there been any disasters with jam on the floor?
Wouldn't want to waste it, but it's so precious because it is a Seville.
Once it comes out of these, it's back to that very familiar...
Gone to the country house, basically, cooking, you know, the cottage-style industry that we always were and are, really.
Is that something that's really important to you?
It is. I think that's the thing that is sort of so niche about this business, you know, that it has that country feel. And I think that is the thing that makes it homely. And, you know, it feels like every pot is made specially for somebody, you know. It has that. We all love it, we do. We have all our moments, but overall it's an amazing place. We're friends and we're a family, and I think that's what is the most important part about this whole process here in Filigan's.
That's the sound of hundreds of seed potatoes being loaded into an old red hopper on the Graham farm in Ballyholy outside Raphoe.
In the 50s, everybody was growing potatoes in Donegal. There were plenty of labour and there were less dairy cows in this part of the country, and plenty of people that had no land worked at seed. They rented the land for the seed, they had the labour, and that was it. There were no other work, so they worked at seed.
Michael Graham is grading the line of seed potatoes that fall from this old hopper in preparation for sowing later this spring. Now run by his son John, this 120-acre farm grows and sells a wide range of vegetables, including potatoes.
Well, all my machinery is older, but because we've cut back the acres, it actually does fine now. So like if you were growing 50, 60 or 100 acres, my machinery wouldn't be good enough. But because we're only doing 12 acres now, it's good enough.
John is not the only farmer planting less potatoes. 2019 saw the second lowest area planted on record, with just over 20,000 acres nationwide. It's the decline of a long tradition here. In the 1920s, agricultural advisor John Silkie began working with farmers to develop the Donegal seed potato industry. Weather conditions were so favourable that in 1929 he achieved a world record on his farm in Creasla with a yield of over 35 tonnes.
It was away from the rest of the Republic and it was ground. The air was better, it was colder now. There were less blight years ago, but it's changed now. With the humid conditions now, it's bad here now as well for blight, as bad as anywhere.
So when the potatoes went over the grader the first time, the large ones went up to the washer and then for bagging. So these are the small ones that came out through the grader for seed. Now we're just putting them back over the grader now to make sure that there's no clay, stones or bad ones in it. Some of these will be kept for this year. But we do buy on some new seed every year, but we use some of last year's seed as well.
And what variety are you growing?
These here are Kerris Pinks. Kerris Pinks are still the most popular variety in Donegal. They're actually the hardest one to grow. They don't tend to store as well, and there are a lot of problems with them. So a lot of larger growers have stopped growing Pinks. But we also grow Rooster, Golden Wonders and British Queen. We start off here in Ballyhooly, that's the home farm. So we have moorland and the townland of Dermore, so that's where we're heading to now. That's where we had most of the vegetables this year.
Changing weather is having an impact on John's overall vegetable production. The trend here in Ireland in recent years towards warmer and wetter winters is making access to his land difficult as winter storms are saturating the fields.
This field is pretty muggy. You may stick to the high ground.
I will.
So this is Dermore. This is the field I had most of my vegetables on this year. We try and plant the potatoes now in the driest fields because the weather in the last few years has got tricky.
Yeah.
The harvesting time, so years ago people always would have done their plough in January. Sure, you couldn't look at the ground most Januaries now. Because we're going out all winter because most of the vegetables stay in the field.
Yeah.
So when you're padding in and out of a tractor nearly every day, it can be sore enough in the land.
Well,
so
you can even see it here. Look at the size of the wheel there, the mark that's leaving. It's compacting the ground underneath every time.
It is, but we just try and keep it to a minimum. Maybe not leave too many deep tracks in the field, stick to the same track.
Mm.
And then once the water lies in an area, like once, more or less the ground's compacted, then
it takes
3 weeks dry weather to dry this field before you could actually go into it again with a tractor.
Yeah, back into it.
To try and level it out.
When you've seen this year then, like how that's responded with 3 months of wet weather, will you plant this again next year?
No, this field will be back into either the whole crop silage or back into grass.
Right.
No, I wouldn't dream of putting vegetables back in
too
it.
Too much.
That's because it's been laboured. It was in potatoes last year. This is a heavy field, so 2 years cropping's kind of enough for
not as much as you can do. Yeah. Well, what's come out of it is healthy. I can see these cabbages. Right. They look great.
So these are a white hardhead cabbage. They winter well. So just there might be a few spots in the outer leaves when you peel them off.
Perfect head of cabbage underneath.
Mm. So these are fairly winter hardy now. They could stand a big frost. So I would call that like a white Dutch cabbage.
White Dutch.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So there's 9 acres in this field. So a mixture of crops in it. Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kale, then onto turnips, kohlrabi, parsnips here, and then carrots on over here.
For nearly 3 decades, Ballyhooly Farm supplied vegetables wholesale. But when prices started to drop, combined with worsening growing conditions, John felt he had no choice but to try selling direct to consumers. With a constant eye on the business, his inspiration for the next move came from an unusual source.
We were on holidays maybe a few years before in Pennsylvania, up where the Amish are. And every farm out there has a roadside stand at the bottom of the lane with their produce on it. And I just suppose had an idea from that then that maybe that's work at home too. and I said, we're going to give this a go. Well, we never really done any supermarkets. We were always supplying like middlemen, men that done door-to-door, or men that supplied supermarkets or small shops. Not really supermarkets, but the smaller kind of town shops. But we're finding just sales were getting slower, harder to shift the product. So I had this idea for a few years, I suppose, about the farm shop. And eventually, I don't know, some wholesaler had offered me like half the price for a product as it should have been. So I just eventually said, right, that's it. I'm going to order this log cabin. I had looked at it before, just ordered it online, and I'd done a lot of the groundwork myself. Basically got it up and running. I think it was December 14, I think we opened, so 3-4 weeks before Christmas. And we had quite enough Christmas, maybe that year, not too bad. Every year we've built on from that. The following year then I got a chance to do in the farmer's market in Letterkenny. And at the time I thought, I don't know how I'm going to fit this all in, but it was the best thing I ever done, getting into Letterkenny. It was a big population, get the kind of the name of the farm that direction too. So it was all about branding the farm, getting people to know. I say we were growing vegetables for 10 years before that, but still people didn't know what we were doing or never heard of us.
And did you find that a strange kind of change from just getting up in the morning, getting out into those fields, growing, and then suddenly you're standing in front of a market direct with consumers?
I have to say the first couple of weeks at the market, I found, well, I suppose I wasn't looking forward to it to start with, because I'm used out in the field, not dealing with that many people. But the first week I came back from the market, I suppose I was so used to getting negative feedback from wholesalers looking for cheap stuff all the time, or complaining about the product, wanting it to look perfect. First week I was at the market, couldn't believe people were snapping up the stuff, couldn't believe how cheap it was and how good it was. So it was all positive. I came back from the market and I just couldn't believe it. Every week it got better and bigger. Like within 6 months we had maybe 5 times the sales we had from the first week, and just really built it up.
So far it's working. John is farming less acres and getting a better price now. He knows he can't compete with supermarkets on price, but John argues they can't compete with the quality and freshness of his produce. The huge carrots still covered in wet clay on display here are testament to that claim. And he's been creative about matching them on convenience.
Even from the start, I always knew it'd never be feasible to have it open like 6 days a week. So it was open 3 days a week. And then really, I was getting more popular. And we always had people coming in on the days we were closed. So they were coming and leaving without getting anything. So as a matter, I set up this for the honesty box. We put the veg on display outside the shop on the days the shop's closed. So people come, just pick their veg and put the money in the box. When the first day I was setting up, I was screwing this box to the post. A customer pulled in. The man says, "Oh, what are you at there?" I says, "I'm putting this up here for an honesty box." And I explained the system to him. He says, "You're off your head. They'll steal the vegetables, the box, the money and all." And I says, "Well, I'm going to give it a go anyway." And it's one of the best things we've ever done.
And does the honesty box work?
It works very well. So I've had people text me or send me a picture at night. A nurse was coming back from like finishing a late shift at 11:30. She was picking her stuff from the honesty box. Any day of the week, if they come here, they'll get produce. Like, they'll never leave empty handed.
Another
customer.
Our Food is presented and edited by Mary Brophy and is produced by Neil Boyle. It is an IWR media production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.